In 1987, a movie starring a number of people, Sean Connery and, of course, Kevin Costner, was made entitled The Untouchables. Many of you have seen the movie. It's about the Elliot Ness story and how he finally was able to nab Al Capone. And it's a pretty riveting gangster film and well done. Well, using a spin from the title of The Untouchables, today I want to preach a message entitled The Unblushables. The Unblushables. Now, what in the world am I talking about? Well, I want to ask you a question. Do you think that we have grown so sinful here in America that we have lost our ability to blush? Now, I want you to think about that for a moment. Now, I'm thinking about my own life. I want you to think about your own life. There are things that used to embarrass me. There are things that I used to be shocked and even appalled at that, to my discredit, no longer embarrass me. I'm no longer shocked by certain things. That greatly bothers me. That concerns me that my own spiritual and just human responses to certain things have been dumbed down or eviled down, so that things that I ought to blush over, I no longer do. There's language that is now used in mixed company that when I was growing up, you wouldn't have even imagined that we would talk about such subjects. It's unbelievable what has happened to our culture. And this is to all of our discredit, including we Christians, that we don't blush. In fact, when was the last time? Now, you don't have to answer. When was the last time that you actually blushed or you saw someone blush? I'll bet you can't remember. Because we have almost lost that ability. You say, well, Dan, do you think that there's ever been a society like this? Oh, of course there has. In the book of Jeremiah, chapter 6, verse 15, you've probably read this before. Paul's taught it on Wednesday nights as he's taking us through the book of Jeremiah. By the way, if you are free on Wednesdays, you ought to come. He's taking us through a vital book that addresses this time in which we live, though it was written centuries ago. But listen to what Jeremiah wrote, God speaking. He said, were they ashamed when they had committed abomination? No, they were not at all ashamed. Nor did they know how to blush. Therefore, they shall fall among those who fall. At the time I punish them, they shall be cast down, says the Lord. You know what's really sad? He was primarily talking to his people. Jeremiah's message certainly was to the culture, but Jeremiah's message, first and foremost, was to God's people, calling God's people to live right, to act right. And they had lost the ability to blush. They had become so hardened and so coarse that what should have embarrassed them, what should have shocked them, what should have appalled them, no longer did. But I got to tell you, in my own life, I see this working in me. I can't believe the culture that I'm living in at this time. It's just unbelievable. If you'd have told me when I first started preaching, when I was 16, 1975, that I would be preaching to a culture that has fallen this far, this fast, I'm not sure I would have believed you. That wasn't very long till I started kind of connecting the dots. And I realized if we did not change our trajectory, we were going down. But I would have never believed that I would see what I'm seeing. I'll be honest with you, I would have never thought that Americans, but even more Oklahomans, would have taken what we're taking from government that doesn't have the authority to do it, and we're taking it anyway. I would have never thought it. I would have thought by now, we'd have been down at the Capitol or at our city council meetings or our town halls with torches and pitchforks. And we're not. We talk about it, but we don't rise up. Now, I know it's difficult. I know putting together a rally or, you know, you say, Dan, what am I supposed to do? I know all of that, and I understand, and I'm bothered by our lack of strategy as well. But, you know, what if the people in Lexington, Massachusetts had had no strategy? What if the people in Concord, Massachusetts had had no strategy? What if there hadn't been the likes of Revere and all those others that were part of an intricate spy ring that had a plan together? We're not even planning. We're just reacting. It's really scary, to be honest with you. I think it says where we are. A great Greek philosopher once said that a man's character is his fate. I think he's right. The founder and chairman of Life magazine put it like this: character is destiny. The Kentucky senator Henry Clay, love him, hate him, said this: of all the properties which belong to honorable men, not one is so highly prized as that of character. It was Tom Hill, right here in the Oklahoma City area, who wrote the book Character First and has used that as his theme for life and business all these years. Character first, everything else follows. It's character. It's character. It's who we are and what we do when no one's watching. That's character. Well, our culture is not the kind of culture that we wish it was. Our culture is one that has lost its ability to recoil at evil. I mean, I catch myself sometimes now when something just really crazy, like what's going on in Afghanistan right now, it's not the takedown and the moving out. We probably should have done that years ago. It's the way we're doing it and just abandoning people and the insipidness of you first give up all your military strongholds and then you start begging a terrorist organization that has vowed the destruction of your country if they'll be nice enough to let us get some of our people out. But I catch myself watching this kind of stuff today and I just shake my head. Can't believe it. So what does a blushless society look like? Well, there's a passage of scripture that explains it very, very well. It's rather lengthy, but I want to read this to you. I want you to listen to it. Romans chapter 1, starting verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth and unrighteousness, because what may be known of God is manifest in them. For God has shown it to them, so they know. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts and foolish, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. Now notice the shift in the text. Therefore God also gave them up to uncleanness. And the first thing that he talks about is sexual perversion. In the lusts of their hearts to dishonor their bodies among themselves. Who exchanged the truth of God for the lie. Not a lie, the lie. What is the lie? Well, you'll be like God. Isn't that what the devil told Eve in the garden? That's the lie. And worshipped and served the creature rather than the creator who is blessed forever. For this reason, God gave them up, second time, to vile passions. Once again, sexual perversion. For even their women exchanged the natural use for what is against nature. Likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust for one another. Men with men, committing what is shameful and receiving in themselves the penalty of their error, which was due. How could you not understand that? How could someone say the New Testament just does not condemn homosexuality and lesbianism? I mean, even a first-year Bible student can get that. I mean, if Joe Biden can still read, I bet he can understand that. Paul then goes on to say, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind. Literally, that means a mind that doesn't work properly. So notice the connection. They don't want to retain God in their knowledge, their thoughts. So God said, then you can have a crazy head. You can go nuts. To do those things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who, knowing the righteous judgment of God, notice what he says here, they know, knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death. Not only they do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. By the way, this is why the LGBTQ crowd will never be happy just with legalization of their activities. That's not all they want. They want you to agree with them. See, they just don't want you to say, okay, you do whatever you want to do. No, that's not enough. They want you to not only do the same, but to approve of what they're doing. This is why they will never be satisfied. No matter how much ground you give, it's just like the terrorist Muslims in Afghanistan or wherever. You can't give enough ground. The only time when you've given enough ground is when they've killed you. Then that's enough ground. And then when they've killed all the people that stand against them, then they'll pick sides among themselves and kill each other. So then, Paul describes here what appears to me to be America, even though he's writing in the first century AD. This is a blushless society. These are the unblushables. So let's just very quickly give the characteristics of an unblushable society. Number one, an unblushable society is irreligious. That means they have no fear or respect for God. Look at verse 21. All this is going to come out of verse 21. Because although they knew God, they did not glorify Him as God. Well, I mean, you know, after all, I mean, God doesn't seem to mind. He hadn't done anything about it. Have you ever heard somebody say something like that? Well, it must be okay with God. He isn't stopping it. Well, you know, there was a church in the first century at a place called Corinth that said the same thing. If you can believe it, there's a group of Christians who are not only allowing a man who had committed incest with what we have to hope or believe was his stepmother. They hadn't done anything about it, but they were actually bragging that God hadn't done anything about it. Well, I mean, after all, I mean, if God wanted to do something, I guess He would. It's kind of like what Peter warns when he says, the scoffers will say, well, where is the promise of His coming? I mean, everything's going just like it always has. These people are irreligious. They know God, but they refuse to glorify Him as God. It's a pride thing. Now, you know these verses, but let me just throw them at you. Psalm 111, verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all those who do His commandments. His praise endures forever. Proverbs 9:10 practically says the same thing. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. I don't care how smart a person is, they're a moron spiritually if they reject God. They're a spiritual imbecile. I don't care how smart they are. I don't care if they can invent a machine that can run on air or water. It doesn't matter. Scripture says if they reject God and refuse to glorify Him, they're a fool. They're a spiritual imbecile. That's what a fool is. Devoid of understanding of God. Well, that's what an unblushable society looks like. Second thing. An unblushable society is not only irreligious, they're irreverent. In other words, they take God's blessings for granted. Look at what the next phrase in verse 21 of Romans 1 says. Nor were thankful. One of the classic signs of godlessness is a spirit of arrogance that believes everything we have, we deserve. I'm telling you, Americans, and we Oklahomans in particular, we have a major problem because I think, though we would never say it, we think the reason we're so blessed is we're just a little better than everybody else. So we kind of deserve this. Do you realize just how decadent that really is? Are you truly thankful? Now, typically when we think of thankful, we think of money, land, houses, cars, stuff. When was the last time that you thanked God that you can hear? When was the last time? Now, maybe right now you're kind of wishing that you couldn't for just a little while. I get it. When was the last time that you thanked God that you can see? You think you'd be wishing you could if you couldn't? When was the last time that you said, Lord, I want to thank you that I can actually feel things? When I was a young man, I started a practice that I carry on to this day. I'm no perfect Joe, so don't think that I'm trying to hold myself up. But you know, I have a real spirit of thankfulness most of the time in my life. I'm like everybody else. Sometimes I can allow arrogance to run away with me too. But you know, I don't even take a drink of water until I first, under my breath, I don't make a big deal about it, thank God for that water. Have you ever been without water? Have you ever been so thirsty that your mouth, literally your cheeks are just sticking together and your tongue's kind of sticking to the side? Can you just imagine? Boy, you want some water then, don't you? Do you realize what a blessing a glass of water is? Jesus said, if you give a cup of cool water in my name, I'll reward you for it. Obviously, it's not the water, it's not the cup, it's the motive. Are you a truly thankful person? Do you realize the things that you have? And I'm not talking about things like money, houses, land, cars. Do you realize the things that you have right now that you should be so thankful for? Now, there's some things in my life that I'm not all that thankful for. I still have 3 horses, and I'm not all that thankful for those things. In fact, people have asked me, Dan, do you think your pets will go to heaven? I don't know, but I know some horses that are burning in hell. I know that for sure. You've heard me say that before. That horse that threw Robin, when was that, Saturday? Was it yesterday? Was it Friday? Friday, yeah. I bet you she's praying that horse is going to burn in hell. What do you think? Seriously, thankfulness. Watch. There is a spirit of arrogance and a lack of thankfulness that pervades our culture. You know these verses. James 1:17. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. Paul tells the Christians at Thessalonica, in everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. A lack of thankfulness is an indicator that you've become unblushable. Third thing, an unblushable society is not only irreverent and irreligious, it's irrational. Meaning, it is incapable of logical thought. Again, this is not my idea, it's straight out of Romans chapter 1, verse 21. But became futile in their thoughts. Now, a lot of times we think that means, well, they're just thinking dirty thoughts. Dirty things. Well, it probably does include that. But literally, generally, what it means is they can't think right. They're nuts. Now, just think about some of these things. Tell me if it's not irrational. Reacting to a disease that has a 99.8% recovery rate as if it is normally lethal and terminal. Is that rational or irrational? Irrational. Claiming to follow science and then claiming there are more than two genders. Rational or irrational? Insisting all beliefs, religions are correct even though they contradict each other. They don't even agree about what heaven is. They say, well, they're all trying to get to the same place. No, they're not. You ever read the definition of the Mormon heaven? It ain't the same as the biblical heaven. It's not the same as the Muslim heaven. So they're not even trying to get people to the same place. Or ignoring the connection between Christianity and civil, prosperous society. You study the history of the migration of the gospel. Everywhere the gospel has gone and has been widely received, it brings with it at least two things: civility and prosperity. Everywhere it's ever gone. Study places where the gospel has not prevailed, you find the exact opposite. How is it that we can't connect those two? Rational or irrational? Of course it's irrational. Protecting the rights of radicals bent on destroying our republic while restricting the rights of conservatives and Christians. Rational or irrational? Promoting the expansion of government while promoting the loss of individual liberty. Rational or irrational? Redefining marriage and ignoring the effect it has on the family and biblical sexuality. Completely irrational. Here we're looking at the world today and we're asking what's wrong with people. We'll trace it back to when we started breaking the home apart and generations of kids grew up in houses where they didn't have both biological parents. Now I understand death comes and sometimes unfortunately divorce happens and God forgives and all that. But you realize that the effect on a culture when you have multiplied generations of kids that have 5, 6, 7, 8 sets of grandparents. Do you realize what a circus holidays are for so many people? We have destroyed the family unit. C.S. Lewis once said, it's ridiculous to take the heart out of a man's chest and then expect him to act morally. It's ridiculous. And so we have redefined marriage to be anything we want it to be, which means it's nothing. We've disrespected marriage and the family. I'll never forget, a couple came into my office years ago, one of the churches where I was pastoring, and you would have thought on the outside that they had a great marriage. The wife was suffering from an illness, but she was doing pretty good. And she was just crying her eyes out. I said, what's wrong? And so as we met and discussed, he had decided to end the marriage. I said, well, is there an affair? No. I just don't want to be married to her anymore. She looked at me and she said, he doesn't want to carry the burden. And I looked at him and I said, you claim to be a Christian. By God and under God, you are to be faithful to that woman and you're to be faithful to your family and you get your heart and your mind right with God and you be the man of God that God has called you to be. He fell on his knees and asked God to forgive him and they're married today and have a strong family. But I counseled another young man who came to my office. His family's coming apart and you'll never believe the counsel I had to give him. I said, Brad, I'll tell you what, after listening to the mess in your family, let me make some suggestions that might help your marriage and your family. Stop going to strip joints. Stop drinking so much. Give up drugs and stop gambling. Why in heaven's name would I have to give that kind of counsel to somebody? That's like saying, stop smashing your thumb with a hammer and you can't imagine how much better it'll be. It's like that man that was walking down the road and he saw this little boy in the distance and the little boy would just ram his head into a boulder and then just rub it and go, ah, like that. And then he'd do it again. And finally the man went up and said, son, what are you doing? Doesn't that hurt? And the boy said, you can't imagine how bad it hurts. He said, why are you doing that? Because he said, it feels so good when I stop. What an idiot. What is wrong with us? Protecting criminals and prosecuting the victims. allowing foreigners to illegally enter at our southern border while we turn away Cubans who are truly seeking political asylum and while we refuse to allow the Afghanistan refugees to come to America. You realize we're having to take them, those that we're rescuing, to other countries because America says no. What a farce. Those poor Cubans who tried to stand up against the communists in Cuba, many of them escaped and made their way across the ocean, and we turned them back. God have mercy on this administration. How about negotiating with terrorists who've said they want to wipe you out? Please, oh please, oh pretty please, please. Here's the deal, guys. Those are the signs of irrational thought. Those are the characteristics of an unblushable society. Now, I've named things that are huge. What about in your own life? How irrational are you? You do stuff that you know's wrong and then you're surprised when it comes back on you. What? We hold everything tightly in our hands. We won't give to the work of the Lord and then wonder why He withholds His blessings. Well, the book of Malachi tells you. God says, you want me to open up the windows of heaven, then you let loose of your stuff. Because it isn't yours anyway. But if you're going to be stingy, then I'm going to shut the faucet off. We won't honor God and then wonder why our kids grow up godless. We send our kids to government schools where they're taught everything from evolution to Marxism to hating America to everything goes in sex and then wonder why they renounce our faith. What? Irrational. Well, the last sign, and then we're done. An unblushable society is not only irreligious and irreverent, and not only is an unblushable society irrational, but an unblushable society is irresponsible. That means they have no moral compass. Romans 1:21 says, and their foolish hearts were darkened. That means morally. Morally. So their brains don't work and their hearts don't feel. What a mess. Kind of sounds like us, doesn't it? So, God says, okay, you don't want to take responsibility. You don't believe in moral standards. And by the way, for those who claim there are no moral absolutes, you can prove that wrong in a second. Do something immoral to them and watch how fast they believe in moral absolutes. Rip them off and watch how fast they think stealing's wrong. Kick them in the shin and watch how fast they believe that physical violence is not a good thing. Poke them in the eye and watch how fast they think that's wrong. Oh, they believe in moral absolutes just as long as they determine what the absolutes are. It all revolves around them. So no moral compass. President Biden gets up the other day in the midst of just a total meltdown of what's going on in Afghanistan. I mean, what kind of people are advising that mentally diminished man to first arm down and then beg terrorists to work with us? I mean, the Bagram Airport that we built, taxpayer dollars, billions, is a fortress. You're going to surrender that first and then try to rescue everybody. For Pete's sake, I'm not even a soldier. I'm not even a commander. And I know that that's stupid. And he doesn't get that? No. So when he gives his speech, what does he do? He starts blaming it on everybody else. Well, it's Trump. Well, it's Trump. Well, it's the advisors. Well, it's Trump. How about it's you can't think? How about it's you who are a lousy leader? Now, it's easy enough for us to see that. What about when we refuse to take responsibility for our actions? I have watched church folks for years blame everything on somebody else. It's the husband. It's the wife. It's the job. It's the neighbors. It's the preacher. So churches just regularly fire preachers, get a new preacher. They find out after the honeymoon is over in a week or two now that they're having the same problems again. So, well, it must be that preacher. He's like the previous preacher. So they fire him and get another preacher. But lo and behold, a few weeks later, same problems again. It's like the preacher that had just resigned on a Sunday morning. He's standing at the door. He's greeting everybody because this is his last Sunday. And one dear lady comes up and says, "Oh, I'm so sorry to see you leaving." He says, "Oh, Sister Jones, don't worry. You'll get a better preacher to replace me." She said, "That's what they all say, and they're just getting worse and worse." That was a nice way of saying you're a lousier preacher than the guy that was here before you. It's always somebody else. Are you real quick to always try to find somebody else to blame for what's going on in your life? Now, sometimes it is other circumstances, but typically what goes haywire in Dan Fisher's life is Dan Fisher's fault. It's not somebody else. No moral compass. Refuse to take responsibility. Irresponsible. And ultimately then, believing no consequences for actions. Come on. I mean, even those who are not Christians can see that there are definitely consequences to actions. So this is why God then three times said, verse 24, "I gave them up." Verse 26, "I gave them up." Verse 28, "I gave them over." Three of the saddest statements in all of the Bible. Now you say, "Well, Dan, what do you think is going to happen to America?" It's not a sermon about America necessarily. What do you think is going to happen to America? Everywhere I go and speak, people say, "Dan, what do you think is going to happen to America? You think there's a chance?" I say, look, the only thing that America deserves is God's judgment. That's the only thing we deserve. Maybe there's still some mercy and grace. I don't know. But if I were you, I'd bow up for impact. Now, we're praying for a third great awakening, and that's why Paul and I are going all over the country trying to preach to preachers and train preachers how to get up and actually have a spine and preach the whole counsel of God and all that. But I'm telling you, friends, don't bank on that. Because it's going well, but it's going slow. And I looked at the clock, and we're running out of time. We may not get another chance. We don't deserve it. I can tell you that. Psalm 9:17, "The wicked shall be turned into hell and all the nations that forget God," except the United States of America, right? No. No. Romans 2:5, "But in accordance with your hardness and your impenitent heart, you are treasuring up for yourself wrath in the day of wrath and revelation of the righteous judgment of God." It's hard to imagine that people would actually store up wrath. But the Bible says that's what the wicked are doing. You say, "Well, Dan, we're Christians. The wrath of God doesn't come on us." No, but I'll tell you what, I've had the discipline of God where it felt like the wrath of God. And God says He will discipline His children. Read Hebrews 12. Read the history of the Israelites and tell me that God won't discipline His children. And not only discipline His children, but discipline His children harshly. See, we all think that we're the exception to the rule. Friend, we are not the exception to the rule. Are we incredibly blessed? Yes. And Jesus said, "Where much is given, much is required." I don't have time to get into this, but I just want to mention it here before I close with a couple of illustrations. But Proverbs chapter 1 uses wisdom to personify God. So God is kind of personified as wisdom. And in this passage, wisdom says, "I've called outside, I've gone through the streets, the concourses, and I've called upon people to hear me, and they said no." So wisdom slash God says, "So when your terror comes and your calamity comes and you call on me, I will not hear you. I will not hear you." You know, it's hard to swallow, but there's a moment when God says, "Enough." But I understand that. I'm a father of two kids. Now, I'm also the grandfather of six kids. There's no limit to that. But on my kids, I beat them half to death over about anything. Now, those grandkids, you know, it's different. It's really not. It's just harder, isn't it? I love my children. I love my son and my daughter. And I would warn them and warn them, but finally, there was a place where they'd crossed over the line. I said, okay, that's it. I'll never forget, Rebecca was just a little old thing. She's probably not more than 4 or 5. Now, understand, swats for a 3 or 4 or 5 year old are very different than swats for a 12 or a 13 year old. But I'd take them back into our bedroom and I'd sit down on the fireplace hearth there. We happened to have a house at that time that actually had a fireplace in the bedroom. And so I'd sit down on the hearth where I could get eye to eye with them. And I said, Rebecca, this is what you did. What should I do? And I'll never forget that little 4-year-old or 5-year-old. She looked at me and she said, spank me like that. And I just went, Rebecca, and I turned my head. Yes, that's what I should do. Now, she got off pretty light. She wasn't doing that to God. She just broke down. But I understand that there's a moment where God says, enough. He told Jeremiah, tell the people, stop. Stop the sacrifices. Stop the prayers. I've had enough. Now, I think if they'd ever gotten sincere, he might have been willing to hear. But he said, not with your present attitude, no. Tell them, shut up. I don't want to hear it anymore. Sir Francis Newport, as you can see, lived in the 1700s. In the 1600s, in the 17th century. He was the founder of the English Infidel Club. So that kind of gives you a little bit of window into his character. I want you to listen to what he said as he was dying. What argument is there now to assist me against matters of fact? Do I assert now that there is no hell while I feel one in my own bosom? That there is a God I now know simply because I continually feel the effect of His wrath? That there is a hell I am equally certain of, having received an earnest of my inheritance already in my own breast? He says, you need not tell me there is no God, for I know there is one, and that I am in His presence. You need not tell me there is no hell. I feel myself already slipping. Wretches, cease your idle talk about there being hope for me. I know I am lost forever. Oh, that fire. Oh, the insufferable pangs of hell. I did a funeral this week of a man that I knew when I pastored a previous church. To my knowledge, he knew the Lord. But you know, at the funeral, there were many people who shared. It was kind of a unique funeral. I like to see people share. There were probably 10 people that spoke. It was a short funeral, really, when it was all said and done. But a number of people shared, and then I shared a very short message. My message, though, was contoured as people kept talking. Because out of all those 10 people, not a one of them mentioned his faith. Not one. They mentioned his patriotism. How ingenious he was. Nobody mentioned his faith. And I thought to myself, how sad. Nobody saw enough of his faith to mention it. There's a good word about that Proverbs chapter 1 passage about wisdom and God. But whoever listens to me will dwell safely and will be secure without fear of evil. Now, I read you what Francis Newport was saying in his last hours. Let me read to you what Dwight L. Moody said in his last hours. It's a little different. Earth recedes. Heaven opens before me. If this is death, it is sweet. There is no valley here. God is calling me, and I must go. I am not dreaming. I've been within the gates. I've seen the children's faces. This is my triumph. This is my coronation day. It is glorious. Quite the contrast. Let's learn how to blush again. Let's learn how to be embarrassed. Let's ask God to soften up our hard, coarse spirits. And let's pray for this culture that I fear God has said, I've given you over. I've given you over.